China and the Final Frontier, this week on Planetary Radio. Welcome. I'm Matt Kaplan of the Planetary Society with more of the human adventure across our solar system and beyond. Andrew Jones is back. Our treasured contributing editor will share all of the challenges China has taken on, from a space station in low Earth orbit to beyond Pluto. Well, not everything, because as you'll hear from Andrew, the Middle Kingdom has far more underway than we have time for. We'll also visit with Jason Davis. The Society's editorial director introduces the June solstice edition of the Planetary Report. Later on, one of you is going to win delicious ice cream and a spoon to eat it with. What more could you ask for? Well, how about Asteroid Day? It arrives on the 30th of June, just as it does every year. But the celebration is already underway. Our boss, the science guy, is part of it. You can learn more at asteroidday.org. Remember, the planet you save may be your own. Just time for one headline from the latest edition of the Downlink. A NASA rover called Viper will head for the moon's south pole next year, hitching a ride on an astrobotic lander. Some of you remember my conversation with Astrobotic CEO John Thornton last August. There's much more waiting for you at planetary.org/downlink, including NASA's appeal to citizen scientists who want to help Curiosity drive across Mars. Jason Davis is one of those who makes sure the Downlink is available every week. He's also behind the award-winning quarterly magazine from the Planetary Society, and he's ready to take us into the brand new edition. I guess the centerpiece, and it is very appropriate, is this Pictures of Earth article, which is loaded with these remarkable images of Earth, which are just stare-worthy. There's a new term. You told me moments ago that it might not have been this planet that got the focus this quarter.
Yeah, when we were doing our long-term planning for what was going to be in this issue, we had initially wanted to feature Mars because, you know, we knew it was going to come out right now, like mid to late June. And of course, next month, we have three new Mars missions launching, and that's very exciting. And we're going to be talking a lot about that. But because this is a print magazine, we plan the content a couple months ahead of time. And so we were doing the initial planning of the Mars feature in March, and that was the time the pandemic was really ramping up. We didn't know, and in many ways we still don't know here in June, how bad it was going to get, exactly what life was going to look like in 2 months when this magazine came out. We didn't want to just drop a giant Mars issue without acknowledging what was going on in the world today. And of course, now, since then, we have more going on in the world today with all the things happening surrounding the Black Lives Matter movement. But yeah, so we decided let's swap out the Mars feature. We can put that online. And we have, if you go to planetary.org/Mars2020, we got all our Mars content there. And instead we were like, let's just feature some pretty pictures of Earth from space. That's one of our favorite things to do here at the Planetary Society anyway. So I hope our readers enjoy the pictures. We sure had fun picking them out.
The other main piece in this, I guess, is this nice article by our colleague, Planetary Evangelist Emily, about sample return.
Yeah. So we went ahead and ran her sample return roundup article as planned for our second feature. And this is a look at all the different sample return missions that are in progress. It's kind of remarkable what is going on right now in terms of bringing samples back.
There is so much more in this edition of the Planetary Report, all available to everyone for free in digital format at planetary.org. Of course, members of the Planetary Society will receive the printed version, which is in my hot little hands right now. There's just one more thing to mention here, because it's so touching to see this. And it's a page by Carl Sagan, not the first time it's been in the Planetary Report.
Yeah. So we have an essay from the September 96 issue by Carl describing why Mars. That's the title of the article, Why Mars. It's interesting. You know, we've been building out a lot of new resources on our website explaining why we're so interested in destinations like Mars. That's a question we've asked ourselves a lot in preparing some of these new materials, is why go to Mars in the first place? What's the motivation? What are we trying to discover? What are scientists trying to learn? And, you know, in looking back, we have this great essay from Carl himself laying out the reasons why Mars exploration is important. So I hope readers enjoy that little look back as well.
His arguments hold up very well. And of course, he describes them as only Carl could. And it's introduced by, I don't think you ever got to work with her, but Charlene Anderson, the original associate director of the Planetary Society. It's great to see her byline once again in the Planetary Report, the magazine that she was responsible for many, many years. Thank you for the preview, Jason. I hope folks will take a look. It's well worth it.
Thanks, Matt. Always fun to be here.
If there's a single lesson to learn from my recent conversation with Andrew Jones, it's that no one should doubt China's determination to explore the solar system and develop space resources. Andrew's network of resources and contacts often reveals more about Chinese plans and projects than you can hear anywhere else, including from China's various agencies and organizations that are part of its progress. It's all the more amazing that he is able to do this work from his home outside Helsinki in Finland. I caught him there a few days ago between assignments for the Planetary Society, Space News, and others. Andrew, welcome back to Planetary Radio. I'm sorry to say it has been a little bit over a year since we last checked in with you about what's going on with the Chinese space program. I think it's probably safe to say there is a lot going on. It has been and more to come. Once again, welcome.
Well, thanks very much, Matt. It's great to be back. Yeah, indeed. As you say, it's about a year and a bit, and it feels like a decade both in space and loads going on.
We have been providing lots of coverage of what is coming up this summer. We have given China some attention with its mission, which will be launching in that same window as Perseverance, the former 2020 Mars rover from NASA. Tell us about this very ambitious trip that China hopes to make to Mars.
Well, this is going to be a very big step for China in its space ambitions. While NASA makes these Mars landings seem almost quotidian, or, you know, at least every 26 months or something, I mean, NASA's been tremendously successful. But this is going to be a big challenge in a number of ways for China. If we go back to, I think it was 2011, China actually had a first Mars probe launched, and that was piggybacking on the Russian Phobos Grunt mission, which was aiming at least to collect samples from Phobos and bring them back to Earth, which would have been a tremendous mission. Unfortunately, it didn't leave Earth orbit and re-entered within a month or something like this. So we're 9 years down the line, and China is now in a position to actually launch its own mission. So they've developed a new heavy lift launch vehicle, which will be launching this mission. They have ground stations, which will be capable of supporting deep space missions, not just in China, but then they have support in Argentina and Namibia. They've landed on the moon twice, once on the far side. So they've gained experience in propulsion and carrying out these maneuvers away from the Earth. Also, just in terms of developing spacecraft and the GNC and everything that's needed, they've had to kind of adapt the parachute technology, which they developed for the Shenzhou human spaceflight missions, to help slow down a spacecraft making an entry into the Martian atmosphere. So there's many different aspects in which China's really made big developments over the last decade, and now they're ready to make this mission. So they have engineering goals, simply getting to Mars, getting an orbiter into orbit, and then attempting the entry, descent, and landing, which is the hardest part. The latest on the mission is that in April, they gave a name to the mission, which will be called Tianwen-1, which means asking the heavens, which comes from a poem from a famous ancient poet called Qu Yuan. This will be the first mission in a larger planetary exploration of China, as it's called. The spacecraft was delivered, I think, in April or March or April to the Wenchang Space Launch Center in southern China. And the launch vehicle, the Long March 5, was delivered, I think it was 23rd or 24th of May. So China hasn't actually said when they're going to launch. We're assuming the launch window is going to be similar to the Perseverance launch window. Based on previous activity, the Long March 5 has taken about 2 months to get ready before launch. So 2 month launch campaign. So looking at the date that arrived, we're looking at around July 23, maybe for the launch, depending on weather and how things go. It's secretive. Not all the details are out, but slowly we're learning more.
We wish them the greatest of success with this mission, of course, because the more science on Mars, the better, as far as I'm concerned, and I think I speak for the Planetary Society and our members as well. That rocket, the Long March 5, that has literally been a long march toward getting this rocket functional again, hasn't it?
Absolutely. So this Long March 5 is China's largest launch vehicle by far. It depended on developing new propulsion. So China developed Kerolox rocket engines to power this. And this was a project which was started in the 2000s and suffered a few delays. I think it was late 2016 when there was the first mission, which wasn't completely smooth, but successful. However, the next launch in July 2017 failed to reach orbit. There was a problem with one of the first stage engines, and the rocket failed to reach orbital velocity, and the mission was lost. Actually, discovering what the issue was took a long time. It turned out there was a turbo pump issue, and I think they went through at least 2 rounds of attempting to fix this problem. They were apparently close to sending a Long March 5 to the launch center early in 2019, and then another issue was found, so they kind of back to the drawing board. But I think it was over 900 days between the second Long March 5 failure and getting the third Long March 5 in late December 2019, get it back on the pad and get it flying. Fortunately for China, that mission went very well, and that opened up 2 possibilities immediately. The one would be the Mars mission, which they had planned since 2016 to launch in 2020. So if the Long March 5 failed in December, then, you know, we wouldn't be talking about this Mars mission. The other thing is that it allowed them to test a variant, the Long March 5B, which is designed to send modules of around 20, 22 metric tons to low Earth orbit. This mission went ahead in May and was successful, meaning that China can now, probably in early 2021, start launching the modules for its planned modular space station.
And that is going to be quite an accomplishment. Before we go on, you said Kerolox. Does that mean kerosene and liquid oxygen?
It does, yes.
Okay, just wanted to clarify. Let's follow up with that space station. It is an ambitious plan, and aren't they hoping for international involvement, just like the other one that is literally called the International Space Station?
Yes, there is a level of international cooperation already. So China's embarking on this project of its own because it is excluded from the ISS. So China initially, in 1992, when it decided to launch a human spaceflight project, it envisaged constructing a small space station of its own in low Earth orbit. However, there was the impression that having demonstrated in 2003 onwards that China could launch astronauts itself, that perhaps it could gain entry into the ISS program. However, that didn't happen. So China's going alone with this space station. However, in cooperation with the United Nations Office of Outer Space Affairs, there was a call for international experiments to fly to the space station. This will probably take place after the construction's finished, so 2023, 2024 probably. But there was a number of experiments, I think around 17, if I remember correctly, experiments from around the world, Europe, Africa, and elsewhere, which will be part of a first round of missions. So this is kind of similar to what Japan did with its Kibo Cube in terms of hosting missions from other countries.
Chang'e 3, Chang'e 4, still active. The U-22 rover just woke up again, didn't it, for another day of work on the moon, one of those 2-week-long days.
It's apparently now Lunar Day 19, which is very hard to get my head around. It seemed like a few weeks ago that this thing actually landed in Von Karman crater. Yeah, it's been a tremendous success. I think they were looking at a lifetime of 3 Earth months for the rover, and now we're over a year and a half, I think, around about now.
What's next for China on the moon?
So next up, and this is assuming that the Mars mission goes well, I think between October and December, the next mission for the Long March 5 will be the Chang'e 5 mission, which is going to be a very complex and very ambitious mission to collect samples from the moon and bring them back to Earth.
Let's wrap up with a review, an update on something you wrote about for the Planetary Society back in November of 2019. And it is impossible to read about this mission, at least a mission proposal by China, without thinking of Voyager 1 and 2. Tell us about this.
Well, this is November. I'm trying to think. That is like a decade ago, considering everything that's going on. But yeah, so there's a proposal in which I think it was Peking University that the PI or one of the project leaders or one of the project advocates, perhaps, has laid out a plan to send two probes, one to the head of the solar system and one to the tail. The idea would be to examine the heliopause and the termination shock and these different parts of the solar system and answer a number of questions which have been raised by Voyager missions and other observations, and just to follow up and bring more understanding.
Andrew, this has been delightful and eye-opening. We really must do this again. And I'm going to look for cheap airfare to China so that we can make our trip there. I have wanted for years to go there. If it could be done and give us some entree to at least some of what China is up to in low Earth orbit and beyond, because it is up to a lot, as you've made clear, and it would be a very exciting trip.
Absolutely. That would be fascinating. Yeah, I think we could pick a conference or maybe at this new coastal launch site, they have a Hilton Hotel, which kind of overlooks the launch site. So if you can time things well, you can maybe book yourself into the hotel at around about the time something interesting would be happening.
All right, it's a date. Andrew, thanks again. Thank you for sharing your expertise. And I'm so glad that you are monitoring all of this for all of us at the Planetary Society and Planetary Radio and the other outlets that you share this with.
Thanks, Matt. It's a pleasure and an honor to chat with you and to just talk about space.
It's fun, isn't it? That's what makes my job so fun, getting to talk to folks like you. Andrew Jones, he's a contributing editor for the Planetary Society. You can read his stuff at planetary.org. But he also writes for Space News, an absolutely wonderful outlet that so many great space experts write for, space journalists. He's based in Finland, and that's where we talked to him today at his home outside of Helsinki. He tweets a lot from @AJ_FI. Highly recommended. Want to hear much more about China's ambitious plans? My entire conversation with Andrew is available in this week's online episode. You'll find it at planetary.org/radio. Among other things, we talk about how the recent flight of the SpaceX Crew Dragon is being studied by Chinese companies that would like to duplicate its success. Back in a minute with What's Up.
Hi, this is Kate from the Planetary Society. How does space spark your creativity? We want to hear from you. Whether you make cosmic art, take photos through a telescope, write haikus about the planets, or invent space games for your family, really any creative activity that's space-related, we invite you to share it with us. You can add your work to our collection by emailing it to us at connect@planetary.org. That's connect@planetary.org. Thanks!
Hey, Planetary Radio listeners, the Planetary Society now has an official online store. We've teamed up with Chop Shop, known for their space mission posters, to bring you space-inspired art and merchandise. You can find exclusive Planetary Society t-shirts, posters, and more. Visit planetly.com/spaceshop to learn more. That's planet.ly/spaceshop.
Time for What's Up on Planetary Radio. Bruce Betts is the chief scientist of the Planetary Society. If you were listening last week, you also know that he's the program manager for our LightSail program. But he's back just to look up at the night sky and all the other fun stuff we do at the end of the show this week. Welcome. Do you remember 2 weeks ago you talked about Vanguard 1, oldest human-made object in space?
Still in space, yes.
Exactly. Patrick Wiggins, actually a NASA JPL Solar System Ambassador in Utah, that program that JPL runs. He says, Bruce was one-third right. Also up there is the third stage of the rocket that put Vanguard 1 in orbit, along with what is called a piece of debris that is associated with the launch.
Good point, space junk. Cool.
Yeah, but you weren't wrong. That's the important thing.
I'm never wrong, man.
No.
In the evening sky, coming up at the around the 11 p.m., 2300 kind of time, we've got Jupiter and Saturn. Jupiter looking really bright over there in the east, brighter than any of the stars, and Saturn hanging out to its left. July 4th, they will be lined up nicely with the moon, and July 5th, the moon will be between them. A nearly full moon will make a lovely sight. And a couple of hours later, Mars comes up in the east, as things have wont to do, looking reddish and brightening over time. In the pre-dawn east, we've got Venus looking super bright. Interesting thing to look for over the next few weeks is the brightest star in Taurus, Aldebaran, below Venus right now. Venus is still quite low to the horizon, so you need a pretty clear view, but you can also, if you get that view, see Aldebaran, and the two of them will close and get closer over the next couple weeks and then switch places. Now, Aldebaran, although a bright star, Venus is still about 100 times brighter.
Good fireworks coming for the 4th of July.
Ah, yes. On to this week in space history. We have quite the mix of things. Let's start with remembering the Soyuz 11 crew who passed away in 1971 during reentry from their mission. And going back to 1908, the Tunguska impactor exploded over Tunguska in Siberia. As far as we know, did not kill any humans, but sure could have, because it leveled a forest about 1.5 times the size of the city of Los Angeles. So
wow. You
remember that with Asteroid Day and Asteroid Week. We've got a lot of materials on our website. Go to planetary.org/defense if you are interested in learning more. And then in 1995, STS-71 space shuttle mission did the first docking of the space shuttle with the Mir space station, so the first docking since Apollo Soyuz about 20 years before that, which we may discuss momentarily. We move on to random space fact.
Well, that's not wrong.
So apologies to those who may have seen this on my social media for Father's Day, but I thought it was so interesting I'd bring it back. The first father and son to both have flown in space were cosmonauts Alexander and Sergei Volkov. What I find particularly interesting is on his first mission, Sergei, the son, returned to Earth from the International Space Station with the second son of a space traveler to fly in space, space tourist Richard Garriott, son of astronaut Owen Garriott. And they came back on the same Soyuz after Sergei Volkov had been up in space for several months and Garriott a few days as a space tourist.
That is so interesting. I did not see that in your social media. And of course, I would have said the Garriotts. I did not know about this cosmonaut pair.
Yeah, it was close. So both Alexander and Sergei had long careers doing all sorts of stuff. Sergei commanding, being on multiple expeditions to the International Space Station.
Well, speaking of astronauts with long careers, let's go to the contest.
All right. I asked you, what was the last space flight of an astronaut who had been an astronaut in the Apollo program? And who was that astronaut? And why did I keep using the word astronaut over and over again? I didn't ask you that part. Just the other part. Oh, how'd we do, Matt?
And you did specify in the Apollo program. You said nothing about him going to the moon. Ian Jackson in Germany Tricky question from Bruce this week. Maybe he was feeling mean since you scarfed all the ice cream?
Yeah.
That was 2 weeks ago. Well, only, and I think this may be a new record low, only about 20% or so of entrants in this contest got it right.
Wow.
Here, isn't that something? Here's the winner, John Guyton. In Australia, another Australian listener and winner to the program, although he's a first-time winner, as far as I can tell. John says that, well, he actually asks, was it Vance D. Brand on STS-35? He was in the Apollo program, but didn't fly until Apollo Soyuz, Bruce?
Yes, that would be the answer I was looking for. Vance Brand flying in 1990 on STS-35, Columbia, as the commander of that mission. He flew on Apollo Soyuz and three shuttle flights and was, depending on where we go in this discussion, the only Apollo astronaut to fly post-Challenger.
Did you hear that? I'm sure that I could hear thousands of head slaps, forehead slaps.
Don't hurt yourself out there.
All right, we can move on.
Kind of remembered I forgot to discuss this with you, Matt, but what do you think of this question? Something a little different. Make up a light sail joke.
Why not?
I figured Matt and I we'd judge it on humor. I will probably look for a lack of egregious technical errors other than a proper humorous context and whatever else crosses our mind. But that's it. Make up a light sail joke. Go to planetary.org/radio contest. You good with that, Matt?
I am just fine with that. This kind of question, getting people to be creative, long overdue, in my opinion. You've got some time to come up with your light sail joke. In fact, you have until July 8 at 8 a.m. Pacific time to get us this answer and win yourself. How about a Planetary Radio t-shirt? Why not?
Yes.
We haven't done one in a while. It's that beautiful design from Chop Shop, and you can go to chopshopstore.com or planetary.org/store, I think it is. Anyway, that's where the Planetary Society store is, and you can see that shirt and all of our other great merch.
I had a question. Are you going to mail the ice cream to Australia?
Well, they got it to me, as I mentioned, with dry ice, and that worked. But I'm guessing because the Planetary Society is just a poor nonprofit and we ship by sea turtle overseas.
That's true. It depends on currents as to when you actually receive it.
Yeah, and the dry ice might be uncomfortable for the sea turtle anyway.
Oh, so, well, they have a shell. Well, no, we don't want to take any chances.
We'll just send a coupon instead.
All right. In a fit of lack of creativity, hey, everybody, go out there, look up in the night sky and think about sea turtles and ice cream. Thank you and good night.
I bet those are two terms that have never, ever been spoken together before. Sea turtles and ice cream. I guess maybe there's mock. I'm Ben and Jerry's mock turtle ice cream flavor.
Mock turtle. Good one.
He's Bruce Betts, the chief scientist of the Planetary Society, and you probably know he joins us every week here for What's Up. Planetary Radio is produced by the Planetary Society in Pasadena, California, and is made possible by its members who celebrate all spacefaring nations. Mark Hilverde is our associate producer. Josh Doyle composed our theme, which is arranged and performed by Peter Schlosser. Stay safe and well. Ad Astra.